30. Sighting. Milgram left the white tea shop, walking in what he imagined as the direction of the Seine, favouring streets that ran approximately perpendicular to the one where he had had his tea, wondering exactly how he'd been followed here from the Salon du Vintage, directly, quite likely, on a motorcycle. If the yellow helmet was really the one he'd seen in London, his motorcyclist was the dispatch rider who delivered the printout of Winnie, the photo he'd assumed Slight had taken in Myrtle Beach. Pamela had sent it after he'd seen Big End on the way back to the hotel. Did they know who Winnie was, he wondered, or what she was? They all took pictures of one another, and now they had him doing it as well. Now he seemed to have found a street of expensive-looking African folk art. Big, dark wooden statues in small galleries, beautifully lit. Nail-studded fetishes, suggesting terrible emotional states. But here was a small camera shop as well. He went in, bought a Chinese card reader from a pleasant Persian man in gold-rimmed glasses and a natty grey cardigan. Put it in his bag with Hollis's laptop and her book. Continued on. He began to feel less anxious, somehow, though the elation he'd felt after giving the Neo the slip wasn't likely to return. The question now, he decided, was whether the motorcyclist, if he hadn't been mistaken about the helmet, worked for Slight or Big End, or both. Had Big End sent him here? Or Slight? For that matter, how to be certain that Big End really mistrusted Slight? Big End, as far as he knew, had never lied to him, and Slight had always seemed fundamentally untrustworthy, built from the ground up for betrayal. He thought of his therapist. If she were here, he told himself, she'd remind him that this situation, however complexly threatening or dangerous, was external, hence entirely preferable to the one he'd been in when he arrived in Basel, a situation both internal and seemingly inescapable. Do not internalize the threat. When you do, the system floods with adrenaline, cortisol, crippling you. He reached for the Neo to check the time. It was no longer there. He walked on, shortly finding himself in what an enamelled wall sign informed him was the Rue Guit Le Coeur. Narrower, possibly more medieval. A few drops of rain began to fall, the sky having clouded over while he had been having his tea. He checked reflections for a yellow helmet. Though, of course, a professional might park the bike, leave the helmet behind. Or, more likely, be part of a team. He saw a magical-looking bookshop, stock piled like a mad professor's study in a film, and swerved, craving the escape into text. But these seemed not only comics, unable to provide his needed bit of words in row, but in French as well. Some of them, he saw, were the French kind, very literary-looking, but just as many seemed to be the ones where everyone looked something like the girl in the tea shop, slender and big-eyed. Still, a bookstore. He had a powerful urge to burrow, work his way back into the stacks, pull a few piles over behind him, and hope never to be found. He sighed and hurried on. When Guit Le Coeur ended, he found a pedestrian light and crossed the heavy traffic of what he now remembered was the Quai des Grands Augustins, then hurried down a tall, steep flight of stone steps, which he also remembered. A sunny day, years before. There was a narrow walkway directly beside the river. Once on this, one could only be seen from above by someone craning over. He looked up, waiting, anticipating the appearance of a helmet, head, or heads. He became aware of an engine on the water. He turned. A dark wooden sailboat with green trim was passing, its mast horizontal, piloted by a woman in shorts, a yellow slicker, and sunglasses, looking very alert at the wheel. He looked back up at the balustrade. Nothing. The stairs were still vacant as well. Noticing a shallow recess, he sheltered there from the increasingly insistent rain. And then a longer, wider boat emerged, from an archway beneath a bridge whose name he no longer remembered. Like the boats that carry tourists for Parisian children to spit on from the bridges. But this one, equipped with a long plasma screen, running almost its full length and perhaps a dozen feet high. And on this screen, as it passed, he saw the agreeably simian-looking young man Hollis had been talking with at the Salon du Vintage. His features unmistakable, playing an organ or piano, his deep-set eyes shadowed in stage lighting, part of a band. There was no sound other than the quiet drumming of the boat's engine, and then the pixels spasmed, collapsing the image, then unfolding it again to reveal those two tedious Icelandic blondes the twins Big End sometimes mysteriously appeared with. The dotiers, contorting in sequin sheaths on the rain-wet screen, mouths open as in silent screams. He set his bag down, carefully, on the paving beneath the archway, and stretched his aching shoulder, watching the dotiers pass, mysteriously, on the dark water. When the rain stopped, and still no one had appeared, he shifted the bag to his other shoulder and walked on, toward the bridge. He trudged up a different, but equally long, stone stair, then recrossed the busy Grand Augustin and re-entered the Latin Quarter, headed in the approximate direction he had come. The cobbles were slick and shining, the street furniture semi-unfamiliar, evening settling rapidly in. And it was here, nearing another randomly angled intersection, that he had the experience. In a setting, as they had said, of clear reality. He had always been repulsed by the idea of hallucinogens, psychedelics, deliriums. His idea of a desirable drug had been one that made things more familiar, more immediately recognisable. In Basel, they had questioned him closely, during early withdrawal, about hallucinations. Had he been having any? No, he'd said. No bugs? No bugs, he'd assured them. They'd explained that a possible symptom of his withdrawal might be what they called hallucinations in a setting of clear reality, though he'd wondered how they could assume that his reality, at that point, was clear. The bugs, whatever those might have been, had never come, to his considerable relief. But now he saw, however briefly, but with peculiar clarity, an aerial penguin cross the intersection ahead of him. Something wholly penguin-shaped, apparently 4 or 5 feet long, from beak tip to trailing feet, and made, it seemed, of mercury. A penguin wrapped in fluid mirror, reflecting a bit of neon from the street below. Swimming. Moving as a penguin moves underwater, but through the Latin Quarter air, at just above the height of second-story windows. Moving down the centre of the street that crossed the one he walked on, so that it was revealed only as it crossed the intersection. Swimming. Propelling itself in a gracefully determined but efficient fashion with its quicksilver flippers. Then a bicycle crossed on the street, going in the opposite direction.
Did you see that?
Milgram asked the cyclist, who, of course, was already gone, and in any case, could never have heard him.